It's Tuesday, July 29th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 348 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 41 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
This is John.
This is Brodor.
This is Beth.
All right, so we got five hosts, and none of them are remote. Beth and Brodor are sharing a mic.
We're very cozy.
And yet, I'm going to guess John is still going to have worse mic habits.
Hi. At least I'm here this time and not being disconnected by your internet service.
Yeah, this... Not my internet. Well, it was my internet service, but only because...
John, it's not our fault. You failed Dan's check versus suck.
Right, right. That was the same yeah. suck that I...
I know. There were layers of irony in that. All right. So let's get straight down to it, because we got a bunch of stuff to talk about here. I want to start by talking about yes, but GMing, which is something that I think even at the phrase alone, and there's a story here that John's going to tell in a second, but I think even the phrase alone deserves a little bit of attention, because... A lot of GMs just tell their players no. They hear something they don't want to hear. It's out of the norm. It sounds like it's going to be too difficult to deal with. So just tell them no. And I believe there are times that's appropriate. But some GMs do it so often that there's kind of been this fad within gaming circles now to swing to the opposite extreme of we're just going to accept everything. It's like a brainstorming session. And so we become yes and GMs. But I think there is a much better value in being a yes but GM. Like, okay, I'll see if we can work with your idea, or at least try and figure out what it is you're getting out of that idea, why it is you want to be this really wild thing. And we're going to find some way to make that work. But because of the fact that it has the potential to be problematic to the game, we've got to put some caveats in there. You know, we're going to have to do some things to control this. So, John, take away with your story now, which illustrates this idea.
Well, I wouldn't say it was a caveat that dulled the edge of what she was asking for. It was just that extra problem on top that I was going to make all of the good thing cause. You know, it was the classic Phil Hicks, take a disadvantage so you can take another advantage, except it was more narrative than mechanical. This was a brand new gamer. She had done a little bitty bit of computer-based, like, video game RPG, but it was her first tabletop RPG. We're playing Pathfinder. And she comes at me with this ever slightly rollingly increasing list of requests. Like, it starts with, we're in a low fantasy setting and I want to be a wizard. And that's totally cool. I'm not even going to yes but you on that. But even that, I'll take it as a plot hook, because if there's not magic on every corner and you can do magic, you're much more likely to be of interest to some people, for good or for ill. And then it kept going a little bit. And then it became, I want to be a princess.
Oh,
and
boy.
Now the bar is being raised. And it was like, okay.
I want to be a princess.
We all just saw Frozen. And her sister, her real-life sister, is in the game, too. So we had this little Anna-Elsa thing going on. They were both half... No.
I want a pony.
Exactly so. They actually had ponies. The other side of the spectrum is that another player character was the goblin stable boy. So, like, we have the whole bell curve of social rank, which can be problematic, but also full of opportunities.
Can I jump in and say something controversial?
Yes.
Frozen sucked.
Frozen was awesome.
That movie was lame. It was boring. It was predictable.
Get off my mic.
Of course it was predictable. It was a formula fairy tale.
Colors.
Get off my mic.
Lord of the Rings was predictable. It's still
I
canon.
Liked it because
no.
it was. But Lord of the Rings wasn't boring.
As far as I'm concerned, the honest movie trailers, and I know a lot of people watch the Screen Junkie stuff. If you don't, I'll link it in the show notes. The Screen Junkie's honest movie trailer nailed Frozen for me.
Don't make me sing.
Dan, have you seen it?
Yes, okay. I did. I had successfully... See, I successfully dodge kids' movies like...
Frozen's for everyone.
That's right, John. Frozen is for everyone.
I'm with John. I can't back you guys on this one. I thought the movie was both great and not predictable like I expected it to be.
Yeah, well, okay, look. I dodge kids' movies like a greased-up man running past Pat. And
that's a hell of a visual.
So you dodge them poorly.
I don't think they often get past that.
Yeah.
That's a poor analogy.
No, they're hard to grab onto. I don't know. The point being, I don't have kids, all right? And so and when the nieces and nephews come over and they want to watch a movie, we send them downstairs. But we did babysit for a couple days straight, Carla's niece. And like every girl out there, she is Frozen hooked right now. And so she brought Frozen over. And I was playing a video game. I don't remember what video game, but while I'm sitting there playing the video game, and there's Tropico, so I'm a Tropico 4. So I'm sitting there playing Tropico 4, El Presidente, El Dan.
Do you want to build a prison?
Yeah. Do you want to build a prison?
We don't actually have to convict.
Do you want to rig an election?
There are some really good parodies out there. And I don't get, do you want to build a snowman stuck in my head? I get, will you help me hide a body stuck in my head?
I think Beth had the best one. I'll link the show notes, but I can't quote here. It's the adult version of Let It Go.
It's the greatest. All right,
but the point being, so yes, I did see Frozen because of the fact that her niece was sitting over here. So while I was playing El Presidente, El Dan, who is a theological vigilante, that is his background.
So you're really role-playing, huh?
Yeah, it's deep. It's deep.
Long stretch from reality here in St. Charles.
I'm wearing a military uniform and I have a pipe.
Okay.
And I live in Miraflores, apparently.
If you have a mustache, then I'll buy it.
No, he's clean shaven. But, all right, so, point being, continue.
Okay, so we've established that she's a wizard where no one is a wizard, and now we've got to the point of being a princess. That's when the no reflex starts to rise in the back of my throat. It's like, we're veering into severe Mary Sue territory, but then I start thinking. This whole group has seen Game of Thrones. They're very into it. It's the dynamic of your royal blood causing you way more grief than benefit is very much alive in their imagination. So I'm going to keep it, but I'm going to cause massive internal factional tensions and external racial tensions between the humans and the elves, and make her a target of abduction, assassination, intrigue, and so on and so forth. So everyone gets what they want. She gets to be her princess, and I get something I can hook a plot onto that can make it hurt. And I think there was one other prong.
You have in here, she's a bastard child.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that was not really any better or worse than
you had prophetically heralded.
Oh, yes. No, she wanted to be the subject of a prophecy of some kind. And I think there's actually, I don't blame her for this because it's in the friggin' SRD. This is out there on the Pathfinder SRD that one of the wizard bloodlines or whatever they're called is born of a prophecy or something
like that.
So she's
Harry Potter?
Yes. She's Harry Potter slash all of the good parts of Sansa Stark and none of the bad parts. Plus all the good parts of Arya Stark and none of the bad parts.
There are no good parts to Sansa Stark and no bad parts to Arya.
Post-season...
Preach it, brother.
Post-book three Sansa.
As far as I'm concerned...
Evil Sansa.
Bill, I've missed my period is a prophecy.
Yes. One would argue the greatest prophecy of all time.
It's as frightening as anything in the Bible.
I think it's the point of half of the Bible.
It depends on which part. However, the first half is a lot more. I keep having my periods when I don't want to be. Yes. But anyway, okay, so.
I was ruminating on Deus Ex biblical analogies on the drive over here tonight, Dan, as I often do. I was thinking Paul Denton really should have been Jean-Baptiste Denton if Adam Denton is going to be the first Cyberdyne and J.C. Denton is going to be their savior. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Okay, so yeah, basically my point is by sitting back and taking something that maybe 5 or 10 years ago would have just made me retch in my mouth and say, no, stupid newbie, you can't be Harry Potter, Elsa, Arya, and Sansa at the same time.
On a pony.
Yeah, on a pony. I went back and said, all right, I'll give it to you, but... Now you just spawned Littlefinger two kingdoms over, and
nice.
He is going to be coming for you. And also, you know, there's some question as to your paternity and so on and so forth.
Yeah, this is going to be like the Caesar has just died, Rome's up for grabs, and you theoretically have a claim on the throne.
Yes. So, their parents are still alive, but that won't last forever.
Right.
John, I'm not seeing where this is yet, because what you've just described to me. You just basically said, yes, and because of it, now somebody wants to kill you. For it to be but, it would have to be, to me, something more along the lines of, I want to be a powerful wizard. Yes, you are a powerful wizard, but that was back on the world you came from, and while you're here, you have no powers.
No, that I see where you're going. And that was sort of why I opened up with a disclaimer that I didn't actually dull any of the things she wanted or take them away. I just explicitly warned her, okay, you've given me the idea of giving you all this baggage because of this and because of that, and it's going to propel the plot. And she was totally on board, and I was totally on board.
This is where GMing turns into parenting toddlers. You're using natural consequences.
Kind of. But it's a natural consequence that will divert the plot away from the awesome plot that came up in my head that no one cares about to reacting to their characters and their actions, right, which everyone loves.
So I suppose you could argue semantically that this is another form of and GMing. So, okay, Wayne, I will grant you that point and save us that wank on the forums. So if you think that is yes, but, or yes, and, you're correct. To just feel good about yourself.
They're going to post it.
Let it go.
Let it go.
See what I did there?
Let it go.
That thread might get frozen. Oh. I expect the discussion will get tangled.
I'm going to give you the cold shoulder for that one.
Oh, the puns, guys.
I didn't
really?
Get it.
I didn't get it.
The point.
And kicking that story around, it led into a discussion about another topic that I think is a bigger topic that dovetails into this one very nicely. A lot of games, in fact, I'll just go ahead and say most games, not all, but most games, have some mechanic and character creation for balancing the characters. Now, you can argue about how well that balancing is done, but in theory, they
always
balance.
Always poorly.
Yes, pretty much. But in theory, there's a balance there. If you take a battle mech and battle tech, whatever you spent the tonnage on, you had to spend it on something. If it's slow, it has armor. If it doesn't have the armor, well, apparently it's faster or has guns.
Or it's a charger.
In D&D, I know no one's going to agree with this, but let's just pretend Gumdrop and Lollipop Land, theoretically, all third level characters are supposed to be equal, right? We'll just pretend
Gumdrop
that's true.
And Lollipop.
Rainbows and roses.
Savage Worlds, you know, all these kinds of things. I realize in the descriptive systems like Fate, this is not going to be as true. But in the really heavily numbers-based systems, and I don't mean crunchy, but I just mean things are pegged to numbers, not adjectives. Theoretically, the characters have some kind of balance.
And even in Fate, they'll take characters like Karen Murphy and John Marconi and you know, the mundanes, and they'll say, well, you don't have superpowers, but you actually have plot power.
Right, you have something else.
You have the regular people ability.
And not a topic for now, but I would argue that a lot of times balance can be based on the person playing the character, too.
Oh, of course it is.
You can have somebody play a level 3 bard that knows what they're doing versus a level 3 fighter that didn't know that they needed strength.
That's how I broke George's game last time. I went to our forums into an episode thread, posted a new roleplay thread, and in the course of buying my level up stuff from 3 to 4, tripled my power level because there were a handful of people on the forum.
And then you can have people like Chad versus, well, let's compare Chad to Dawn. Dawn is a very quiet player. Chad is a very loud player. Chad will dominate a scene while Dawn will stay back. Even without getting into mechanics at all, Chad will be a more powerful character.
All right, so here's the topic. And we're going to break this down into a couple parts. Part one is you have a party where one person, at least by description, does not make sense in the party. Example, we're playing a D&D or Pathfinder game. We're all starting at level 1. We're supposed to be town guardsmen, fresh adventures, whatever. But one guy wants to write into his backstory that he's a longtime veteran of the army, seen all this crap, been everywhere, blah, blah, blah. By all rights, using D&D standards, you know, he ought to be 10th, 15th level, and yet this person is first level. See the same thing in Battletech, somebody who has the starting skill packages, and yet they want to claim that they've been out there and fought through the Succession War and War 3039, all this kind of stuff, and you know they really should be operating at a different quantitative level.
You just love the War of 3039 so much.
I think no one else
in the Battletech fandom ever even talks about it.
Well, Chris probably would, but I'm just hanging my head there. But
okay.
I think it's one of the underappreciated.
It's definitely underappreciated.
They kind of skipped over because they went from 3025 and just kind of hop, skipped, and jumped to the clans. And the War of 3039 was kind of this underappreciated comma between 3025 and the clans.
How did we go from Dan describing running a game for Chad to us talking about a Battletech wank?
Because it's for the boot. Welcome.
I was just thinking that I know exactly how Dan felt this evening when we were talking about comic books.
Yeah,
like I get it now.
Yeah. All right, go on, Dan. Good point.
So point being, they're playing something that does not fit in with the rest of the group. That kind of bugs me because of the fact that in my mind, the sheet and the description that's in the person's head, I mean, they don't have to be in perfect parody. I get that the character sheet's an abstraction. I don't approach this with some kind of wooden literalism, But I want there to be some kind of
parody.
Yeah, parody. Some kind of synchronicity that occurs between these two items.
That's a yes, but situation. Okay, you want to be a army veteran, but now you're in a guard with newbies and you're coming in at level one. Okay, give me a reason why you lost all those skills.
Well, yeah. And yeah, we'll come back to the reset character in a minute, which is one of the second leg of this.
Yeah, but when we're not dealing with the reset character, it's more a question of, so how did you kill that dragon over 2 days of fighting it when you're a level one and have no skills?
Yeah.
And that's what we're dealing with here.
And 5 hit points and...
Well, let me link it back to the original topic that John brought up. The answer is just no. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me as a game master. And it sounds to me that the mechanics are going to have a big part in what the backstory of your character is. And if the mechanics are going to allow for it, if it's something like a fate system, or you're doing some hippy-dippy, very loose, very fluffy Chad-style game,
right,
that works. But for a D&D game or for something that is crunchy and hard mechanic, I don't think it makes a lot of sense, and I don't think I'd be down with it.
Even in a, as we put it, a Chad hippy-dippy game, it doesn't always make sense, because let's say this guy is a guy that's gone out and fought and killed dragons, and mechanically it'll work just fine because it's a hippy-dippy Chad story game that doesn't have dice and has Jenga towers instead.
Yeah.
Which is kick-ass, by the way.
But
the point being,
why is that character hanging around with a bunch of guys that just came off the farm?
Yeah. I think Wayne is correct that even in a Chad-style game, it just comes back the other direction. The Chad will say, sure, you're the elite super ninja hanging around with a bunch of people that can't put an ice cream cone to their mouth accurately. But he's still going to say, with whatever limited system he has, 3 pulls off the Jenga tower, still 3 pulls off the Jenga tower. Mm-hmm. If you're playing like inspectors, you know, you've got that die pool is still a die pool, and you still need a certain roll or a certain, it's not number of success, I think it's a roll, but you know, you still have to roll that 6 or whatever. And it's, he may say yes to the concept, but he's not going to really let you off the ranch, even with the rules that he's got. And I mean, I don't know if he'd agree with that if he was here, but I can just tell you from having seen it in action. So, I mean, does anyone here, I mean, disagree with me? And they'd say, no, I'd totally allow it. I don't care if there's a complete lack of parity between the character sheet and the background.
I wouldn't allow it.
No, I wouldn't allow it. I'm with Brodor. If my Nooblet came around and said, by the way, when I was in training, I accidentally wandered into a white dragon's worm lair and killed it, I would say, no, you didn't.
I allow just about anything. I've only said no to a couple things while GMing, and that's something I just wouldn't do either. I mean, you have to be able to make your character somehow make sense with the sheet that's in front of you. That's how I feel about it. I mean, I don't want the rules to stop the game, but there's still character rules balance. I mean, the character has to make sense with the other characters around the table, and the sheet needs to somehow show what you're saying. If you want to come to me and tell me that you're this great warrior, but your stats mean that you're going to roll a failure every other hit, that doesn't make sense to my story, to your story,
right,
to our story, none of the three.
And I think descriptive systems still have to wrestle with it, but I think they would wrestle with it in a different way. Let's go back to the fate system. You might all say that you're grunts in an army. I'm supposed to be the super accomplished, special forces, been out there for 10 years kind of guy. But probably when we sit down to do the aspects, a good GM is going to say, well, these guys' aspects, okay, they're going to be kind of, you know, plus one, minus one. If you want the plus 10, you better take a minus 10.
Right.
So you're this grizzled SEAL, but you've also seen some stuff that's really messed your head up or whatever. I don't know what it would be, but I think a good GM is probably going to ask for balancers where, okay, maybe you're not the green recruit, but that sheet is still somehow going to bring you back into the same range as everybody else, such that you're operating on their level. You're just operating on their level, right, because instead of at a plus one, minus one, your zero sum is a plus 10, minus 10.
Right. And I'm sorry. No, that is going back to my original point. I think that the mechanics, the system that you're using, is going to make a big difference on if that's a viable option for your character or not.
It's going to make a big difference how big the power gulf is between big characters and small characters in that system. If you're running D&D, a level 20 fighter is worth a million level 1 fighters. It can never be taken down. If you're running something more modern, a gunnery sergeant's probably a better warrior than a private, but he can't kill 500 privates coming at him at the same time. Yeah. Well, and if you're playing a modern game, you can be a little more experienced.
Doesn't Pat have that movie?
I'm sure he does.
500 privates coming at me at once.
You know, there was, this was floating around Facebook a little bit ago, and I'll see if I can do it for the show notes. There was a somewhat social experiment they did where they took, I think this was in Japan, they took these three like master fencers. They're like grandmaster, you know, fencers or swordsmen or whatever exactly they're using fencing foil. So I think it was fencing. And what they did was they put them up against something like 100 novices. I'm serious about this. And they want to see what happened. And the way the game worked was everyone had like a little cup on their chest that had a balloon in it. And when that balloon was popped, you were, quote unquote, dead and out of the game. And the question was, could three genuinely ultra elite grandmaster swordsmen take on and defeat 100 or whatever? I mean, it was a crowd. It was not like 10 guys.
Right.
I mean, it was a sea of guys, you know, and could they actually take it? And what ended up happening was at the start of the combat, every one of the individual 100 people, they really kind of thought of themselves as, it was a bunch of one-on-one fights. I want to go up there and try my best. I want to go up there and try my best. And one by one, they got defeated because each of them was really focused not on winning the fight, but on preserving themselves. But what they found is near the end, they took on this mob mentality. And it's like, five of us are going to jump him and three of us are going to get popped, but the remaining two are going to get him because he can't block us all. And sure enough, boom, 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 down with the three grandmasters, and the mob won the battle.
That's why you have to get your surround before you make your Zerglings attack move.
But, I mean, you are absolutely correct. Let's talk about a modern game here. Someone who is a grizzled veteran SEAL, a 762 by 39 to the cranium is still 762 by 39 to the cranium. That's that.
As a gun guy, that was very sexy.
Yeah, thank you.
What I struggle more with in game are the difference between resources, where you have one person who wants to be, let's say, the president, and he has the Secret Service.
Oh,
and
the
he has
social imbalances.
Yes, and then you have somebody else who wants to be a hobo.
We're all level one adventurers, so we're all class level one, whatever. One guy sweeps the stables, the other one is a prophecy heralded pony riding.
We literally had that
prince.
One of the characters in that same group was a goblin sorcerer who was the stable boy. Now, he had his own shtick because he was secretly magical, so it's not like he was truly a mundane schlub.
Okay,
but we had the princess and the poop cleaner.
Let's
say
people that see him on the street don't know that
exactly,
he's
and that was part of the point. He was hidden.
Well, but let's say he had been a level one rogue. I mean, on paper, this is perfectly balanced, but yet there's a social dynamic that says we are not the same.
Right.
That even if we can't put this in the mechanics the game intended,
right.
If you were to put numbers to it, these characters are no longer equal.
And that's when you got to do some GM jujitsu, because we took that and we said, okay, Miss Princess Wizard, you're responsible for containing this crazy goblin sorcerer and simultaneously preventing anyone from finding out who he actually is, and they're looking. Go. So they weren't necessarily friends, and, but there was sort of a two-way street of need.
John, let me pause here to say, with most GMs, and I will fully admit, myself included, I would not trust that. I do with you, because I've seen you do it.
Wow.
And here's the problem. Somebody says, well, I want to be the prophecy heralded princess, pony riding, whatever else was on this list. I hate to pick on this girl, I don't even know. But the point being, you know, somebody says they want something and you're like, okay, we'll do it, but there's going to be a balancer. For that plus 10, there's going to be a minus 10. And then what happens is the minus 10 doesn't really get enforced, or it does not get enforced to...
Oh, baby.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I throw out all the prep I have once I get that minus 10.
I know.
I'll do it in the middle of a session.
That's what I'm saying. I know you would. And
because you're evil.
And
no, they like it more. They don't think they like it, but they like
it. No, it's part of the deal. I mean, it's part...
Yes, means
they,
no.
They want that minus 10 scratched, even when they don't think they do.
Yeah, and that's part of the deal. I mean, as they said, this is my drawback. And I'll be honest, a lot of times I don't use it. And sometimes I don't use it because of the fact that what they wanted would affect the whole group. And to me, that's not
fair.
That's
even better!
Well, it can be, but let's say you're playing let's go sci-fi here. You're playing a space opera. You're all on a ship together, and one guy took, I have the entirety of some massive fleet after me, because I'm a war criminal.
Yes.
How is the rest of the party? I mean, if you really play a lethal game and you really put that minus 10 on him, what about the other people in the party that didn't get the plus 10 for that problem?
They turn him over and get the reward.
No, okay.
Amen.
Okay. I see where you're going. If the consequence is so extreme that it washes over and around the character and he is just a super god character in a sea of poop that everyone else is in and they have nothing more to compensate for it, I agree that that's highly problematic.
He's a god.
But I would not do that.
He's a god, but everybody else shares his curse.
No. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
When you have a problem, it's your problem.
Yeah, and you got to be careful. But note to GMs, you've got to be careful of that because too many times the minus 10 that gets offered becomes a group-wide problem.
Right. Which
and
is no balance.
People are suffering for things they didn't benefit from. Yeah,
the big thing looking at that particular story that I would be worried about, and I'd have to be watching if I were running it that I didn't let it happen, is if the whole group went in thinking, we're going to be traveling from town to town to hunt down this murderer or something. They have something in mind already that the group thinks they're going to be doing, and then the whole campaign becomes about this person hunting down your princess.
Wayne, just hit on my biggest problem here. It turns into a one-man show, and everybody else is sitting there twiddling their thumbs, being bored as hell when it becomes the Pony Princess show.
This is why you get minus 10s on everyone else, too, and you weave them all into a glorious tapestry of pain. Then it's about everybody. Right. Rodor is pointing at me because he knows I'm right.
John's absolutely correct. The thing of it is that you have to, as he said, do your GM jiu-jitsu, and you've got to be able to take that spotlight and shine it on each person.
Exactly.
And make their story important and weave it into the story of the others. I know I'm on board.
The goblins that he came from knew he was gone and were looking for him. Like, he wasn't out of the forest either. I think the
point there that I would really want to underline is that these have to be interrelated, or at least it helps if they're interrelated.
Yes.
If her claim to the throne is somehow tied to a goblin plot to assassinate the current king and queen or something like that.
It wasn't tied that firmly,
but
the connection between their characters made it one another's problem.
Right. Well, the point being, though, that way
it is now.
Yeah.
The point being, though, that way when it goes sideways, everybody's involved. It's not just one person's problem. The spotlight suddenly just broadened everybody instead of being focused like a laser on one person.
Right.
Which begs the question, and it's sort of on topic, sort of off topic, but I was having a conversation with an old friend today about gaming, and she was talking about the game that she's running, and her friends make a lot of boneheaded decisions, and she's not sure how to deal with it. And I was like, it, roll with it. Just go. Duh. I mean, everybody's having fun. If you're enjoying the game, just embrace what they've done and, you know, put on your black belt, do your jiu-jitsu and just enjoy what's happening.
Decisions. If somebody decisions thought, I didn't want them to make.
If somebody thought a 30-50 quick draw was a good idea, you just let nature take its course.
That's right.
If someone thought accepting jewelry from a gypsy was a good idea, it's wonderful.
Shut up, Wayne.
All right, so
the term is Roma, Wayne.
There's another topic here that evolves off of that one I want to hit on. But first, I have to take a quick moment here. We have to have a Brodor break. You always have such good stories. What's the dumbest thing someone has said to you within the past 2 or 3 weeks?
Oh, no, I can't be put on that kind of spot because, so here's the secret to being Brodor, right? So life is just coast. Like, I get up in the morning and I get in the roller coaster car and I put my bar down and I just ride that thing until I can get home and have a beer. That's how it works. And so this would mean that I would have to pay attention to what other people are doing and saying for me. It would distract me from the track of the roller coaster.
I have a Brodor story.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Sarah and I are at the fantasy shop and we're looking through games. And we're talking to him about the game we're looking for and they don't have it at that one. So he calls in and gets it held at another one for
me. Okay. So you're at the St. Charles location.
Right. So as we're talking about it, we start talking about other games like that. And he goes through it. He's like, well, there's this one game. I think it was Rampage.
Right.
He's like, he sells me all the mechanics, sells me on the game. He's like, that's great. Do you have it? Oh, no, we don't sell that.
No. We sell it. We just don't have it in stock.
Right. Then he goes on. Right. And he's like, but there's this other game. And he explains it to me. I'm like, oh, do you have that? Oh, no, we don't have that either.
Dude, Dave Wallace will never hear this because the only episode that he's listened to is the interview that you guys did with me. But I'll tell you what, man, some night when we're not recording, that's a deep, dark, friggin' retailer thing, man. That is, it's constant. It's absolutely constant.
What, making sales of product you don't have?
Correct. I mean, we're Pepsi
products.
Yeah, we are the masters of it. But no, God, you're putting me on the spot like that. If you'd give me a little bit of warning, I probably could have.
You got home one night, you needed that beer because
that would probably because I mean, so all right, Running a small business, managing people, is very much like running a role-playing game. You have a variety of diverse personalities, and everybody is needy. Everybody wants you to focus on them, and then you're sitting at the table, and that player thinks they're the only player at the friggin' table, and all of your efforts have to be toward that particular player. God, I hope my employees don't hear this episode. So
I hope they're not involved in tabletop RPGs at the fantasy shop.
So, but my point is that it's truly, truly challenging. Because the player thinks about the player and the player's interests and the player's desires and how the game is entertaining to them. But the game master has to take that into consideration for Dan and Beth and Wayne and John and then try to find their own fun in there someplace. That's running a small business. You got four stores, four store managers, a bunch of employees, and you're trying to do all that GM, general manager jiu-jitsu.
Have you ever tried to apply game mastering techniques to managing the store? Like somebody,
absolutely.
Like somebody asks you a question, you're like, hold on, I got to take a dump.
Right. So adversely, I will take game mastering techniques, apply them to business, and take business management techniques and bring them to the frickin' gaming table.
Oh, yeah. Trial practice is awesome GM training.
Yeah.
Go to law school if you really have nothing better to do. Don't do that.
All right. So the topic that we want to close out on here that is yet another kind of subtopic that evolved off this original thread is what we're going to term the reset character. Now, this is a character who shouldn't be level one, except something occurred somewhere along the way that set them back. Okay.
Dan, I have two examples that are characters I actually want to play someday.
Okay, go ahead.
One is the fighter who had worked his way up through the ranks and he was a well-known fighter. He was right-handed and he lost his right arm.
Jaime Lannister.
He is now learning how to fight with his left hand.
Okay. So an example, this guy would have been a 10th level fighter, except he was seriously injured in combat and now really cannot.
Yep. So the other character I had that I've always kind of liked the idea of playing would be a paladin who had lost his faith. He had been a paladin. I know there are rules for anti-paladins and for regaining the faith, but this is the concept of a character who has just completely lost all faith. And now is going down another class entirely.
So, okay, so the way you would probably handle that is put aside the rules that are normally there for...
Right.
And just
that
say,
would be
look,
purely backstory.
Yeah, purely backstory that I used to be a paladin. I would have level 10 or 12 paladin. Theoretically, we're just ignoring the rules here. But something occurred that erased those 10 or 12 levels, and now I'm a first level thief, or whatever it is you decide to do.
I was thinking fighter, but thief would be a great thing to go to.
That's fine, yeah. Whatever it is. Your
Thiefadin, best multi-class character ever. No, it's not.
Yeah. And like in both of those would be what I would call reset characters, where they would have had a history. You can work that into your backstory, but it makes sense that they don't have whatever abilities led them to that.
Right.
And it would make sense now that they're starting with another group of first levels because they have to learn a whole new set of skills.
You got to be careful with that, though, because you could say, okay, well, I used to be a 10th level paladin, so I have all of this knowledge from being a 10th level paladin, and people can start to lean on that. I could see that coming into play very easily.
Did they take the intelligence for it? Did they take the wisdom? Because if I were GM, I'd make him roll it.
Intelligence is the one stat that paladins don't have to take. You have to make it a six.
Well, yeah, and I would certainly want the person to have this reflected all the way through. You don't remember certain things. You don't want to talk about certain things. They're inapplicable because you're now in a new place fighting a new kind of monster you've never encountered before.
In the case of a paladin, you were looking at everything with a certain eye. Everything you saw came from your god that you now are no longer connected to.
That'll take your lay on hands and your spells, but why did you just lose 90 hit points?
I realize there's been this long ongoing debate about what are hit points. At one point in D&D history, they were described really as your ability to roll with wounds. Yeah. It was more
of whatever they are, whether it's a deflector shield or they're actually numbers come out as you bleed. Why do you suck at it now?
Yeah, no, and I think that's a fair question. I think some of that you're going to have to gloss over. Don't get me
wrong.
You're
fighting in a new way.
I think it's very simple. In that scenario with the paladin, you have the machine of the gods. I mean, you literally have God to say, suck it, start over.
Yeah.
Right. That's it. You lost your faith. You offended me so egregiously that you go back to
school. Oh, that would work. That would work if that was in the fiction.
In the case of the warrior, you've taken serious injury.
Right.
You've lost your right arm. Well, no, what else did you get damaged?
Doing the Jamie thing is fine. That's been done before, and I have no problem with it.
You mean that the guy's going to be a colossal hole, and then he's going to lose his hand, and miraculously the audiences everywhere will love him.
I never understood why he was suddenly accepted by everyone, or why it was so baffling that he had that scene with Cersei. It's like, dude, this dude has been a dick the whole time.
Yeah.
Why are you so shocked?
Thank God. You're the only person.
I know I'm the only person.
I read Twitter.
So, Dan, I'm sure you're riveted by this not having watched any of it.
All right, good.
Dan, I'm sure you're riveted by this not having watched any of it. And me having only seen the first season, getting all of these spoilers is just fascinating.
The books came out in the 90s.
I don't care. I don't want to read them.
Okay, then you don't care. Sorry for spoiling nothing.
Now, all right, hold on. The closest I can give it to this from a real life scenario was I did know a guy who was a complete prick. I mean, this guy was just an absolute asshole. And he got in a wreck and lost use of one of his arms. And it was a true story. And apparently, because of that accident, that really made him think a lot and it really humbled him a lot. And he turned into one of the nicest guys that I'd ever known. So I know I have no idea what you're talking about in Game of Thrones, but the point being, I can't
even
see,
besides accidents, life changing events can do that to a person.
Yeah,
there was an elderly woman that lived on the hill that I lived on growing up, and everyone hated her. She hated everyone up there. She was the meanest person I ever knew. When her husband died, my mom went to his funeral, and she was so touched that someone actually cared about him that she became one of the nicest people we ever knew. It was a night and day difference change because of a life-changing event.
I think that's us Italians.
Going back to...
Shifty.
He said the hill he grew up on, not the hill.
Oh. Yeah.
To explain that to non-St. Louisans, there's a part of St. Louis called the hill, which is a heavily Italian influence. Yeah. Most of St.
Louis. I didn't live on the hill. I lived on a random hill.
Yeah, just a hill.
I still say, in the case of Jaime Lannister, the guy was doing other things that he shouldn't have with certain members of his family.
Yes. All right, we've bored them.
So pulling off Jaime Lannister, let's talk...
As many characters have.
Yeah. So talking here about...
And he now can't.
So talking again about reset characters, there's only one that I can think of I've ever wanted to play, which has been that cold and dark wizard that I've talked about before, having been screwed out of playing the one time I played him. And his story was that he was this largely unsuccessful wizard who had maybe made it up to level 2 or 3 tops, was not that good at what he did, and then ends up basically getting himself screwed over at the level of his life essence and goes through this metamorphosis where all of a sudden he's still aware of and able to use magic, but his entire personhood has changed to the point that it's like coming out of a cocoon, a different creature. He doesn't know what he is anymore, how to use any of it. So you have this reason why suddenly he doesn't even understand his own powers anymore. He's having to refigure out everything from a completely new angle from the ground up. And I'm putting a bow on this here. I think reset characters can work. But one, I think they have to be plausible from every angle. You have to look at, does the background make sense? Does the story make sense? Does the change in stats make sense? Does this really mesh out? Have we really thought through why this person works that way? And I think the second thing is I would not want a party of them, because I think it's a story that's plausible for one person. But when this becomes the story of everybody at the table, it just starts to get silly.
It becomes Final Fantasy VIII, and you stare disbelievingly at your tube screen in 1999 and stop playing JRPGs.
Well, one other thing.
Slightly biographical.
One other thing I'd say to watch out for is something we talked about earlier on the episode, the social difference. Explaining why all of the stats are back to level 1. You know, Dan, are you asking to play a character that was a... You know, I was the grand wizard that everyone in the kingdom knew.
No, I'm not asking you to play that. Just to be clear.
But that everyone in the kingdom knew. You were infamous.
The kingdom of Mississippi.
You were loved by some, hated by some. But everybody knew your name. Yet,
could you just start the story over with, I'm a powerful wizard.
No, I like
I'm
it.
I'm the archmage.
Fine.
Keep it.
Okay, so Dan... Let's say you're playing your wizard. You want to be the most powerful wizard in the land. Everyone has heard of you. Everyone fears you. But now you're a level 1 wizard that does other things. Is there a social issue that could come from that, of everywhere you go, people would recognize you and remember you, but you don't have the same power. That could be really cool in a story.
Oh, I agree.
And that could work well in the game.
Yeah, provided it doesn't become spotlight hogging, yes.
Exactly. And that's one of the things we were talking about earlier, the different social status. Everyone else is an unknown, but now you are the known.
Right, but let's assume for the sake of argument that his character is the only one. So he's only first level, but there's nobody else in this particular area of the world that anyone has ever known that can make light, can take a gold coin and make it glow like a candle. He's it. He's the anomaly.
Yeah. Well, I can't do a lightning anymore. Well, I, you know, clearly the moons and stars, and I don't have any powder on me. And hey, who knows
right,
the difference?
Right, right.
You know, I've seen an interesting reset character idea from that, of the character that's been reset that doesn't have all those abilities, but is bluffing that they still have all those abilities.
Yeah.
That could be a fun character to have in a group.
I've had that.
That would be fun.
I've had that NPC a few times. I've never played that as a PC, but I've had that NPC a few times. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap this one up because we are actually headed off to a moonlight sale. Brodor's, we're going to buy moonlight. Moonshine. No.
I'm down for moonshine, man.
But yeah, Brodor's shop is having a late night sale. We're all going to crash. So we're going to wrap this one up here. Thank you guys for tuning in. Check the show notes for some fun little stuff. I don't think we had anything in, like, big announcements this show, but you know, should be fun little links and stuff in there. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.